The path to authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit Equivox.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of the show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Simone Canego, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Nowhere to run, nothing to hide from the government's prying eye. Take yourself a summer holiday.
The Path to Authenticity proudly supports the I Speak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit ispeakmedia.org. Your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 117 for April 6th, 2021, featuring the author Simone Canego, who I really enjoyed talking to. This is an example of one of those times I didn't really know what to expect with Simone. We hadn't met. We just kind of connected online. And as it turned out, she's just a perfect fit for the podcast. So on this day in 1789, the first United States Congress began regular session at Federal Hall in New York City. In 1814, France granted sovereignty to, in 1814, Napoleon Bonaparte abdicated. In 1830, Joseph Smith and five others organized the Church of Latter-day Saints in Seneca, New York. In 1862, Confederate forces attacked General Ulysses S. Grant at Shiloh. In 1865, at the Battle of Sailor's Creek, a third of Lee's army was cut off by Union troops who were pursuing him en route to Appomattox Courthouse. In 1896, the modern Olympic Games began in Athens with eight nations participating. In 1909, the Americans Robert Peary and Matthew Henson became the first men to reach the North Pole. In 1917, the United States declared war on Germany and entered World War I. In 1924, four planes left Seattle on the first successful flight around the world. In 1941, German forces invaded Greece and Yugoslavia, and in 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson authorized the use of ground troops for combat operations in Vietnam. So, again, I couldn't have found a better fit for the podcast with Simone. I really like her. She's a great mom, which comes across clearly in this episode, and she's kind of won me over, to be honest, so I hope you enjoy it. Simone Canego.
No
So my book is called The Extraordinary Unordinary You. It came out in October, and it's about my life. It's about a lot of the things that I've done, the good, the bad, the ugly, the sad, kind of all of it, with really the underlying theme that it took me a long time to get to this place of that we don't need to change who we are. We need to change the way we see ourselves.
Oh my gosh. I love that.
Yeah. So I'm a mom of six. We adopted our youngest three children from Ethiopia and South Korea. And, you know, I talk a lot about our stories. Stories are what connect us, really. Stories are what define our lives. And it's so important that we share our stories. And I felt like this was the right place. I've been doing some speaking, and I felt like writing a book was the right place to share my stories.
So what part of your life was it that was there a particular part of your life that you thought, this is what I want to write about?
Yeah, it was really the part of starting with, well, I talk about all the kids, but different stories out of the kids' lives. And obviously from my perspective, because perspective is reality. They might tell you otherwise in some of my stories, which makes me laugh. But, you know, really talking about how I got to where I am today through stories, because I struggled for a long time not knowing who I was. I tried many things over my life. I started off as a CPA. I have a master's in accounting, and it wasn't me. I went back to school to be a teacher. I love doing that. I went into medical sales. I worked as a sales rep for a coffee company, a cereal company. I can give you the list, but I really couldn't figure out what I wanted. I was so focused on what I thought everybody else wanted me to do versus, you know, what I wanted for myself. And it took me a long time. I turned 49 last week, and it's within the last couple of years that I said, this is where I want to be. This is what I want to be doing. I love telling stories, and I love, you know, the human connection piece of sharing who we are and the struggles, not just the shiny moments, because I think that sometimes we forget how important it is to share what we're struggling with because we feel embarrassed about it. I'm not exactly sure. But really so that, because if you can help one person by sharing your story, then you've made a huge impact on the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're not alone. I mean, we're about the same age, and I could describe my path to finding myself as very similar to yours, where, you know, I think I'd like to think part of it's wisdom, just getting to the point where, you know, recognizing the, I guess, internal messages that we have that we need to listen to. But you're right. One of the things that I've talked about in this podcast that kind of drives me crazy is that, well, first of all, there's this indoctrination that we all go through about what we're supposed to want with relationships and jobs and our bank account and our children and marriages and when we go to work, what kind of job, all that. I mean, and, you know, I've gotten to the point in my life where I've begun asking myself and challenging other people when I'm guiding them, well, who does that serve? Is that really what you want? And for me, that question has been integral in beginning to really get closer to who I actually am by asking myself, well, what do you want? What do you want to do with your time? How do you want to spend your life? Who do you want to be among? Where do you want to be? All those kinds of questions, I think, lead us in that direction. And, you know, anybody who listens to this podcast, the little introduction spiel that I do, you know, one of the things I say is that the guests all have one thing in common, that they're people who know who they are, which I think is really important. And people need to hear those stories, because I think culturally we are lost to a pretty large extent. You know, we kind of don't know who we are, right?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, when I think about it, and this is what I say to my children, I have my oldest three are one's doing a master's right now. The other two are in college, and you know, they talk about what their major is or what his master's degree is in. Mm-hmm. And I say, and that's fantastic. And right now you're passionate about this, which is even more fantastic because I don't think I was ever passionate about when I was in college. I was just doing what I thought I had to do. But understand that you might get to moments in time where this isn't what you want to do anymore. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to realize that this isn't the right path. Like, you have to, you can't be so hard on yourself. You can move forward from that and not, it's not a failure. When you change your mind about something, when you realize this isn't for you, you find the next thing and you figure it out. But I think so many times we look at transitions like that as failures, and they're just not. They're just part of our path. They're part of our journey. And I think it's so important for us to understand that. And it took me a long time to understand that, but I totally can look back and say everything that I've done every moment in time, you know, brought me to this place where I am right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel the same way. And some of those things were ugly for me, you know, difficult relationships or difficult jobs or mistakes or whatever. But, you know, I don't know, those things, I feel like, you know, if we persist, strengthen us and, you know, just kind of make us who we are. In a big way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you know, like, we're pretty like-minded. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's a path to authenticity.
So. Right, right. Hello. Well, this is the stuff I talk about all the time, you know? And one of the things I talk about, because I'm in a position to guide younger people when they're mostly guys making the transition from boyhood into manhood. And I'm an addiction counselor, so it's when, you know, they're having issues when I meet them generally, but, you know, I always tell them, and I had to learn this the hard way. If you follow what you want, you know, say you want to be a musician or you love music, work at a record store or whatever, you're going to find your people. Even if that's not the job or that's not the career, you're going to find your people and it's going to lead to the next job, because every job I've ever had always led to the next job in one way or another, you know? And I like what you said about the transition stuff, because, you know, we don't do a very good job of celebrating those times when, a job comes to an end and, well, maybe you could go get another one, but it's really just for me, my last legit job, at the end of it, I thought, you know, I'm not going to do this again. I'm not going to just go get a job for the sense of some semblance of security, which isn't real anyway, could go poof, like we've all learned with COVID.
Right.
At the expense of what I actually want again, because that's what I had done over and over again. And I had a good career. I've been happy. I mean, and in hindsight, I think I needed to deviate. I think I needed to do all those things to be who I am now. But also for me, that was a really powerful decision to say, you know what? I'm not going to go get another 9-to-5. I'm going to find a way to do what I want to do and cover my expenses. And if I have to struggle for a while, I'm going to do that. So, because, you know, when am I going to do it if I don't do it now?
Yeah, the time is now. I always say the time is now. And, you know, we all struggle. We all struggle with something. And, you know, we hate to admit it, but we do. And I think it's important to talk about those things and really look at what we have to decide at 18 years old. And sometimes even before that, we go to college and we have to pick what we want to do for the rest of our lives. And like, maybe the year before, like our parents were still helping us with everything. And now all of a sudden we have to say, okay, this is what I'm choosing and I'm going to do this forever. It's a very hard thing to kind of deal with as a teenager, and then moving forward into adulthood, thinking that it isn't, you know, a problem or it isn't a failure when you didn't follow through with it. But I think that it isn't. I think that we really need to embrace the change that happens and really find what we want, because that's what makes us happy. You know,
and if we're happy, then we'll be at our best. That's
exactly. I mean, happy to me, like, it's not the money you have in your bank account. It's not, there's so many things that how people define success or whatever they define for stability. But it, to me, it's really happiness. Do I go to sleep at night stressing about everything, or do I go to sleep at night? And I go to sleep at night because and trust me, there's still stressors. Like, they're like, again, with six kids, there's still things that are happening all of the time. But I'm happy and I'm doing what I want to do. And it took me a long time to get here, but thankfully I am here.
Well, you know, before you mentioned this about this choice, when we, you know, that transition into adulthood, like, what am I going to do with my life? Which I think is actually a false choice. We don't, I think it's unrealistic to believe that we should know at 18 years old what we're going to do with the rest of our lives. I mean, what do we know at 18, right? How could we possibly know? And I just feel like, for me, I had a lot of shame because I didn't know exactly. I mean, I had some ideas, but I didn't know. And I thought I was supposed to know. I mean, I thought there was something wrong with me because I didn't know. And what I've learned instead is that's just not how I work. You know, like my ex-wife knew what she wanted to do when she was 14 years old, and she did it, and she's still doing it.
Wow.
Which is, you know, I applaud her for that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't that way. I'm interested in all sorts of things, and I'm intuitive and, you know, kind of emotionally aware. And I just kind of feel my way through things. And that's how I decide. And it works for me. It does. So I just think for all of us, you know, we all can have our own path. And we don't have to feel bad if it's not what somebody else thinks it should be. Even if that's our dad. Right?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, as parents, I mean, I have one son. So, I mean, you have to know, having six kids, I mean, the buttons that get pushed, right? It's just really, they're such teachers for us. But, you know, and we're fallible. We make mistakes and we project our fears onto them. Parents aren't always coming from the best place when they're trying to influence what their children are doing. They mean well.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's what is best for their kids. You know, I want you to be an accountant because then I know you'll always have that to fall back on, and I won't have to be afraid that you won't be able to pay your bills. Well, that's your fear. That's what that is. And your child isn't responsible for that. Right.
But that's what we do. That's what, you know, that's what's been done forever. Right. That's, and still now, that's how, you know, so much
people
of our
people don't know any different.
Yeah. And we just say to our kids, I really try not to, I really try. And my kid, I think my kids would back me up on this one, but that I really say to them, because one of the things my parents used to say, and again, my dad passed away 2 years ago, and my mom thank you. My mom is, she lives like 5 miles away, and she's amazing. But, you know, my dad would always, and they always had my best interest in mind, but it was what they thought was the right thing to do. And they used to say, my dad would say, well, you can't do that. Well, why can't I do that? Well, I've done something like that before. I made my mistake. You don't need to do that. I'm like, well, let me make my own mistakes. I mean, this is how I figure out what I'm doing with my life. But he thought that he was guiding me in the right direction by telling me what he did so that I wouldn't do the same thing. Doesn't really work that like that when you have kids. they're humans, right? Like there's no manual. They decide how they're going to do things, and the best you can do, we do the best we can, right? And the best we can is we guide them, and and for me, it's really about showing them what is out there and that how important, especially now, how important happiness is, how important feeling comfortable in your skin, being able to share anything that you're struggling with and never feeling like you are alone. I think that's the biggest thing for me, is that when there's something happening, know that you're not alone. There's always someone that will be there to help. And that's kind of how we go through things. We'll see how it all turns out. So far, so good.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough one for people. You know, I was having a conversation with a client about that part today, that, you know, you're not alone. You might feel like you're alone, but you're not. And, you know, one of the big lessons I've learned is these things that are difficult for us to talk about, the things that we tend to feel most embarrassed about or the most shame about, when we have the audacity to share that with people, it's very endearing. And we connect, and people, you know, people are grateful for that. And what we fear will push them away actually draws them in.
Yeah.
It really does.
It really does. Because when you can stand up and say, this is what I'm struggling with, people, they want to listen, they want to help, and they want to share what they're struggling. They really do. They want to share because people always feel like they're alone. And the whole thing is that you're not alone. Like, just reach out. And always so such an important conversation. And with six kids, I see so many different angles, so many different things, because not one human is the same.
Yeah. So can I ask, after the three children, what was it that made you want to adopt? You just wanted more kids, or?
So we had talked about it actually between child one and two. I had a hard time getting pregnant, so it was a discussion back then. And then, of course, magically, I was pregnant, and the discussion went off the table. And after child three, after child two, we had moved to Florida, and then
from Minnesota.
We lived in Texas so we lived in Florida. Then we moved to Texas for 5 years, and then we moved back to Florida. And when we moved back to Florida, we had our third child, Olivia, and the discussion came up. What do you think? And we talked earlier about the now, how it's kind of like the now or never, and we're big believers in the now. And, you know, in terms of adoption, there's just so many amazing kids out there waiting for a family to love them. And we knew we could be that family. At least we thought we could be that family. That we now know that we could be that family. And all of our kids were on board with it. They, you know, it was discussions from the beginning that this is an entire family process, because we're now like at beyond zone defense, and we're going to, you guys all need to be on board and feel good about it, because there's going to be a lot of changes. And they were great from the beginning. And
that's good.
And then we adopted our son from South Korea. And then 2 years later, we adopted our son from Ethiopia. And then a year later, we adopted our daughter from Ethiopia. And then the minivan was full. And some days it's chaos. Some days it's organized chaos. It just depends.
Yeah. So how old are your youngest kids now?
Now they are 13, 14, and 16.
Oh,
and then the oldest are 24, 21, and 18.
So you waited 3 years, sounds like. Two, three
yeah,
years?
It was a couple of years. And yeah. So our son, Ari, who is now 16, he actually came home at 4.5 years old. So, wow. Yeah.
So
there was a little bit of a time period in there.
So there's an episode I did. I think it's episode 16 with a woman who I've known for a long time named Joan Marino, who's a therapist and adopted a Chinese girl, I guess almost 10 years ago now, but you should check it out.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about that process. And Joan and I, you know, I've had a couple people in my life, one in particular who was really important to me, who was also a foreign adoptee. And, you know, it was the kind of thing where it made sense for me to educate myself on it mm-hmm. and learn about it and try to stand in her shoes. And you know, it was a really eye-opening experience for me to, you know, start to read about, there's a book called 20 Things Adopted Children Wish Their Adoptive Parents Knew. Mm-hmm. And like just the 20 things in that were things that, I've never even thought about before about, and having family members who are adopted, I'd never thought about it. And it's just, I think it's something as a culture, we can do better with that too. That's another thing that, you know, I think we don't always pay enough attention to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's so many parts to it. Us, when we went into the process, you know, we really understood, and we understand even more now that our kids are starting at a place of loss. There's no savior syndrome here. There's no, we didn't save our kids. People say to us all the time, oh my gosh, your kids are so lucky. And my response is always, it's me how they're lucky. And they're like, oh, well, you know, they have you as a family. Thank you for that. But, you know, let me help you understand that they lost everything before we were able to adopt them. So, you know, they really are. They've lost the family that they started with. And that's a really hard way to start your life. We're very open and honest as we talk about things. You know, we talk about anything they want to talk about. But, you know, it's really important to us that they understand that this isn't a thank you situation. There are kids, there are family, and you know, we love them. Like that's all that matters, is that we love them, and everything else is, it's hard because, you know, when I look at my life and think, okay, I'm starting at this place, how do I move forward? Mm-hmm. Kids are so resilient. They truly are. They're amazing. And I think for us, it works really well that we really have open conversations about anything that they want to talk about, because, you know, nothing should be secret. Let's talk about what they want to talk about. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, Simone, it makes me really happy to hear you talk about this, because, you know, when I mentioned, you know, reading that book and having done my research and to try to understand, what I was hoping is that you would have an understanding that that's how their lives began, from a position of loss. And I think that is what people don't get. There's the, oh, lucky you were adopted. Well, would you feel lucky if you literally didn't know any of your relatives? I mean, does that, you know, that's not a lucky me sort of feeling. It's not. And so a lot of the messages around it are invalidating, you know,
yeah,
and confusing. And so to know, and then, you know, going back to how we can fail as parents, I think there are a lot of parents out there who probably don't have the emotional maturity to be able to do things the way you're doing them without feeling Well, of course, you have fears that, you know, are they going to feel like I'm their mom or, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's scary stuff. And it's a vulnerable sort of feeling, you know, all those things. So it is, it's a huge investment of emotional energy to, and so just that you're showing up for them like that really makes me happy.
Thank you. I can tell you that for us, it's really, you know, we're all about raising good humans and having them have their, you know, self-esteem and being proud of themselves. And I once had a conversation with a friend and we were talking about our son, Noah, who's from South Korea. We adopted him when he was 4 months old, and it's a closed adoption, so we don't really know anything about his birth parents. For our children from Ethiopia, we actually, when we were in Ethiopia, we met the remaining members of the birth family. So we had that connection piece. But for Noah, we didn't. And so I had a friend ask me, so what happens when he's 18? And I said, well, when he's 18, hopefully, his birth parents will want to reach out and make a connection. And she's like, what do you mean, hopefully? And I was like, it's a piece of him. Like I think this is so important. I send pictures every year to who knows if anybody ever looks at him, but I send pictures to put in his file, hoping that his birth mother, his birth father will see him growing up and him happy. And then my friend said, well, so if he meets them, what if he decides to stay in Korea? And I said, well, then I did a really good job, like that he feels comfortable in his skin. And again, the more people that love our children, the better. It's not a competition.
Right.
It's really raising good humans.
Wow. So cool. I'm happy. It makes me happy to hear this. That's the point, right? Like there's enough love to go around, right?
Yeah.
And we can all use more of it. We don't have to, you know, there's not a scarcity thing here. We don't have, you know, just because he or she loves me doesn't mean they can't also love someone else. And oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's a backwards way of thinking, but I think a lot of people feel, I have six children, like, please love my children.
Right.
You know, but I think that sometimes it is a backwards way of thinking that we think that it's a threat. If someone else loves our children, it's not a threat. It's wow. It's amazing to have the more people that love your children, the better, you know, the connections they have. It's so important.
Well, you know, I mean, there's nothing like when somebody comes to you and says, man, your kid's just great. I love your son. Like, I mean, isn't that awesome?
Yeah. I love getting those compliments.
Yeah.
You know, it is. It's really.
Yeah. For me, one of them that I would get with my son, just stopping at the gas station, you know, and yeah, I don't know these guys. I see their faces. But one time, one of the clerks, my son was in there with me 10 feet away. And he said, is that your boy? And I said, yeah. And he said, he's a good boy. like I see a lot of kids and that's, man, there's just nothing like that. You know, we all want to believe that about our kids, but you said something about raising good humans, and my mom and dad were really clear about, you know, you do what you want with your life. I just want you to be a good man. We need to be honest, kind, you know, I mean, just be good. And then we'll be proud. That's what matters. And
it's my ultimate goal.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's huge. I don't think there's enough emphasis on that, you know? So, all right. So now we got to talk about Kilimanjaro. You climbed Mount Kilimanjaro.
I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, 2015. So 6 years ago. It's amazing how fast time goes.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not a climber. I had never climbed.
Well, evidently you are a climber.
Well, it's more of a Kilimanjaro. Trust me, it is a challenge, but fortunately, it wasn't technically challenging. So that made it a little bit more my speed. But it wasn't, honestly, it wasn't a bucket list item. It just kind of one of those things that came to me from my husband was asked if he wanted to do it. His friend had climbed it the year before. And my husband said, no, thank you. Actually, the way I tell the story is he counted to three, then said, no, thank you, call Simone. Uh-huh. And so I got the phone call. He's like, that is not the way. I said, perspective is reality. He's like, that's not the way I responded. But I was like, okay, well, I like telling the story that way. And so I got the phone call and they asked me if I would be interested in doing it. It was with the Livestrong Foundation. So we were raising funds and awareness, part of an organization called Survivor Summit, where the leader, his name is Chris Warner. He wrote a book, basically it's Leadership at Elevation. And so, you know, leadership is in every aspect of our lives, but leadership on Kilimanjaro is a whole different bird, right? You're trying to figure out, how do we move forward as a team? How does this work? All of these things. And we were 16 people. I didn't know anybody. Everybody was complete strangers. So I trained for 6 months. I showed up in Tanzania. I met my roommate and my tent mate, Rhonda, who she's amazing. She's a breast cancer survivor. And literally working with these people, it was so inspiring because there were several people on the trip that are cancer survivors, other ones that were climbing in honor of somebody else. So adding that piece, mixing philanthropy with a huge challenge, emotional and physical challenge, really kind of sealed the deal for me. And it was a life-changing experience. And yes, I had many people from the beginning say to me, my close friends were like, oh, you got this. I was not in great shape when I first started training for it. I got in great shape for me. And it's all relative. Now I'm in COVID shape. But really, you know, I would have people say to me, you really think you're going to make it to the summit? Be like, wow, that's a great way to start a conversation. Yeah, I really do think I'm going to make it to the summit. Thank you. I will. And that was really the mindset I went into it with, was that I really believed that I could do this. And being around people who were so inspiring and had so much grit, it really took it to a whole different level. And we did. We all summited. There were definitely times figuring out, okay, how are we moving forward? I mean, it's tough. I mean, the summit is 19,341 feet. But really standing at that summit and kind of looking down, thinking everything that got me, like we talked about before, everything that got me to that point in time, anything that I had struggled with before, the self-doubt, the inability to move forward on things, can't figure out what I want, brought me to that moment in time. And it really was a moment where I said to myself, I'm not going to say you can do anything because that's over exaggeration for me. But if you really work hard, if you really believe in what you're doing and you really work hard, you can do it. And that was that moment in time for me. Hmm.
So how do you think the people who said, wow, do you really think you're going to reach the summit? What do those people have in common as opposed to the people who cheered you on?
So one thing I always say to my kids is when someone is being mean, I always go back to my kids, when someone is being mean to you or someone has something negative to say to you, it's because they're struggling with something within themselves. So when someone is, you know, what the kids would say, like they would have someone bullying them at school about something. And I said, you know, just take a step back. It's not about you. It's about them. And I really feel like that is a true statement, especially knowing now, like the people that said that to me, do you really think you're going to make it to the summit? I'm like, you know, they're struggling, you know, with something within themselves. And so it really wasn't about me and it was about them. And if I could help them, I would. But I didn't let it bring me down to, to make me doubt myself. I did that for years. I let other people bring me down and let me doubt, you know, doubt myself for years. And right. I'm past that point.
Yeah. Cause you know, this is something that's come up in conversation for me lately in some recent episodes. The people who do that are never the ones who have, you know, conquered their doubts. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not, they're the ones who haven't achieved. And their, you know, their doubt is really their doubt in themselves. And, you know, somebody else who, you know, swam the English Channel would not say to you, do you think you're actually going to get to the top, Simone? Come on. Right? I mean, that's just not how it works.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I really feel that when someone has something negative to say, it's because they're struggling with something themselves. And it's not about you.
Yeah.
It's about what they're struggling with. And they're, you know, they're projecting it on you because they feel, you know, something sad, something bad about themselves, and they don't know how to move forward.
Yeah. Where'd you learn all this stuff? How did you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Life happens. Like I really, so much of it is just kind of working through the things that I struggled with. I had one moment in time that really sticks out to me where I was sitting at, this was the beginning of the understanding that we don't need to change who we are. We just need to change the way we see ourselves. And I was sitting at this women's luncheon and I was already uncomfortable because I wasn't fitting into my clothes. And I show up at this event and I'm listening to these two amazing women, motivational speakers, and they were truly amazing. And when they were done, I felt bad about myself. I was like, that will never be me. That will never be me. And that was when I had this, just this moment where I said, and that's the whole point. Hello, Simone. Like, that's the whole point. You're not supposed to be them. You're supposed to be you. Look at what you're doing in your own life. Look at the little things that you're doing every day make a huge impact on the people around you. I think a lot of times we forget that. We don't realize that these conversations that we have with people, saying hi to somebody, like really starting off in a positive way, can really, really impact people. And that moment in time really had me take a step back and say, you do make a difference and you need to stop being so hard on yourself and realize what you're capable of. Realize what you're already doing every day, because those are the things that really do change the world around you.
Wow. Well, you know, it brings to mind the way that I end every episode is with the words, be nice. And it kind of comes from a conclusion I drew, I don't know, at some point in the last 5 years, maybe 3-4 years ago. You know, I live on the East Coast of Florida, which is a little less friendly than the West Coast where you are.
Yep.
People don't generally say hello to each other. Most of the time don't make eye contact. And, yeah, I grew up in the Midwest. I mean, people don't always talk to each other, but, you know, it's a lot different than here. And I guess I was at a point where I was a little bit resentful about it. Like, I don't know, maybe I tried saying hello to a couple people and they didn't say anything. You know, people can be so weird sometimes. And at first that made me mad. And then after a while I thought, you know what? I'm going to say hi to people. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be nice to people. That is the world that I want to live in. And if they want to live in the world where they don't respond when someone acknowledges them or says hello, that's their choice. But I want to live in a better place than that. And I have really lived by that. And quality of life-wise, I mean, it really makes a huge difference. We have power to create our own reality. And, you know, it's just a better life experience to live that way. And, yeah, I mean, it was a powerful lesson for me too, just of how much control we do have mm-hmm. over our own lives and our own experience.
Yeah, it's funny because I think for a long time, maybe I thought that it didn't make a difference. But the more I interact with people, the more I really not only say hi, but ask them about their lives. Sit down on a plane and ask them about their story, and people open up. And I really realize how important it is for me. And yeah, if they don't want to say hi, okay, that's okay. One of my things that I laugh about, my kids make fun of me all the time about this, because no matter where I am, I say hi. I try to start a conversation, and they're like, oh, here she goes again. Which person do you think she's going to sit next to? Who's she going to talk to? But I do it. I do it all of the time, less right now because we can't really go too many places, even though Florida is wide open, as you know. but really getting on an elevator, that to me is one of the most fascinating things. Mm-hmm. Fascinating thing. We get on an elevator. We pretend to stare at the numbers as they decrease or increase. We are scared to make eye contact with people. And I don't understand it. It's like, we're all people. Like when someone gets on the elevator, say hello. That's all. Yeah. Good morning. Hi, how are you? Not staring straight ahead like they're people are scary. And so I do that every time. And it's interesting. We have a friend who, after he read my book, he said, So I started something new, Simone. I'm now getting on the elevator and I'm saying hi to people, and they are looking at me like I have lost my mind. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, because you've gotten on that same elevator for 20 years and never spoken to anyone, mm-hmm. it's going to take them a little bit of time.
Yeah. Well, and that's how I live in a high rise, and I'm up and down the elevator all the time, in and out. And especially when I was like going to an office and seeing people in the hallways all the time at the busiest times of day. And that's kind of when I decided that I was going to make that change. But I do have to say, it was before I got my dog. Mm-hmm. And that makes a huge difference too. I mean, I have this dog who it's like if he was a human being, he would be going around saying, oh my God, I'm so happy to see you. How are you? Like, I mean, just loves on everybody and just makes people smile and just embodied love, you know? And that really warms people up, and that's nice too. It makes it easier to talk to people. It's something outside of ourselves that people can focus on and not focus on the fact that we're not making eye contact with each other or whatever it is, you know.
Right.
It's a distraction. But it's weird the habits that we get into to try to, you know, to live in our little bubble to feel, you know, what we think of as safe, right?
Yeah, break out of the bubble. That's all I'm going
to
say.
It feels better outside the bubble, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you meet amazing people and hear amazing stories. And it's been one of the most powerful things for me and it's funny because my husband says, well, I pulled a Simone today. I now have a term. I pulled a Simone today. I said, yeah? He's like, yeah, I had to call somewhere and I was really frustrated. But instead of like starting with being my frustration, I started with a conversation. Hi, how's your day? You know, how's it going? Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you won't believe it. Like, I learned all kinds of stuff about this person and they were so nice.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, good. You pulled a Simone today. Congratulations.
Yeah. Wow. It's funny. Yeah. Well, I have a friend who I texted him this morning about something and it was like straight to business. Hey, can you tell me? And his response was, hey, buddy, good morning. How are you? You know, like he does that. And there are plenty of people he does that with. But it's a reminder like, hey, take a breath, slow down. And the other thing I want to tell you is that my mom was the one who was friendly to people on vacation and all that kind of stuff. And my dad just I mean, he would say, well, hell, she'll talk to anybody. She doesn't care who it is, you know? And I don't know. I guess as a kid, it was a little bit embarrassing to me, but I also didn't like necessarily side with him on that position. But in hindsight, I mean, that's a pretty great thing, right? When you have the mom who is friendly to people and nice to people. There are much worse things a mom can do than be the person who everyone thinks of as kind, right?
Yeah. I mean, to me, that is, I mean, hashtag goals. Like, yeah. for people to think that way. And honestly, as my kids get older, they don't, even the younger ones, they're not embarrassed by it. Sometimes they listen in on conversations and they're like, can you believe that? That was so interesting.
Yeah.
I was like, I told you. So I think that they get it. They understand that. And I wasn't always like this. I used to walk with my head down. I used to not acknowledge the world around me. And it was that moment of realization that I am really missing out by just trying to go from point A to point B and not enjoying the journey along the way.
Yeah.
So I think they've seen that transformation. And I think that, you know, I say that they make fun of me, but I think it's in a really good way where they're like, that's pretty cool, actually.
It's playful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So who would you say is your greatest influence? Mm.
So my mom. Mm-hmm. My mom, she grew up in rural Pennsylvania on a farm. Her mom had a 6th grade education. Her dad worked in the coal mines and a local brewery, and she had two older siblings, and she knew from a young age that she wanted to be educated. She worked for another family since she was 13 or 14, saving all of her money. And she applied to the University of Pittsburgh and she got in. This was in 1957, and she worked 3 jobs while in college, applied to medical school at the University of Pittsburgh and got in. She was one of 5 women in her class out of the 120 people in the class. And all 5 women graduated. You know, she worked her butt off to get to that point. And she had to work consistently after that because she was told that she's working in a man's world and that she really doesn't have a voice. And she found her voice and she did amazing things over her career. And I look at her and think that she was one of the women who really paved the way for so many different things. And when I look at my oldest daughter who is about to apply to medical school, like, this is inspiration for her. Like, she saw, I mean,
1965. Was modeled for her.
Yeah. She graduated in 1965 from medical school. I mean, that to me is just, it's amazing. And to look at how she never looked at any of the obstacles in front of her as endpoints. She looked at them as bumps in the road. And not that she didn't struggle. She did struggle. There was a lot of times where she was like, what am I doing? But she never gave up. And she just worked so hard to be, I mean, she, not only was she a physician, she cooked dinner every night. When we were little, she sewed our clothes. Like, even now, if something happens to my kids' clothes, I bring them to her house so she could fix them. You know, and she's 81. So, yeah.
I bet she loves that too, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah. She, anything to help, she loves that, you know, to be able to help and whatever we, can I bring you dinner? Are you busy today? Can I bring you dinner? Like, yeah, sure. You can come cook any day you want.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember if I mentioned that I'm the youngest of 8 kids.
No, you did not.
But, yeah, I mentioned it to somebody today. So my mom, I mean, you know, that is a life of service. Raising 8 kids. I mean, come on. And one of the things I'm really excited about is I'm going to have her on the podcast here before too long. We've talked about that.
Oh, that's exciting.
It is. It is. She turned 90 not long ago. Raised 8 kids, more grandkids and great grandkids than you can, I don't even know how many, a lot. But yeah, and sharp as a tack, really smart, so close, you know, so like when I was a kid, whatever the fad was with shorts or whatever, like instead of buying them, she'd always want to, well, I'll get a pattern and some material and I'll make it for you. And, you know, when I was really little, she cut my hair and she cut my dad's hair a lot. And eventually I've had enough of that, but she just, she canned and she worked. I mean, she did everything, you know?
Yeah.
And, one of the thing, what I really believe that there's just another gear that women have that guys don't. And it's clear with moms because, you know, getting up in the morning, making the meals for the kids, doing whatever, and then going to work and it's a little different now where I don't think women are as much expected to just do everything, but there are also a heck of a lot of single moms out there doing everything. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, when I watch that, like I have a close friend who has 4 kids and a career, and she goes and goes and goes and goes and goes. And it's like, man, one day like that, I'd be ready to pull my hair out. I don't think guys have that. I think women have that, but I don't know. That's just my opinion.
I can only speak from the woman's side in that, I'll agree with you, but I think men might disagree with me. So, you know,
well, I just think it's I like the end of the day. I like to be done. You know, it does. It's not like that with moms.
There's
just not.
There's no end of the day. Actually, what I started saying is that, especially when the kids were younger, they'd be like, mom, I'm like, wait, what time is it? Oh, it's 8:05. No, mom stopped at 8:00.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's a boundary. That's self-care, right?
Okay. Didn't follow through all the time, but you know, I tried.
But you know, another part of this that I think is really important as a parent, and I tried to kind of always remember, is that, you know, we talked about how parents can project onto their kids, but I think what's even more harmful is when they do everything for the kids. Because, you know, it's they train them to believe that they can't do anything. Whether it's, you know, address an envelope or pay a bill or do laundry or, you know, when, and I think, you know, again, a lot of times, I know there were things my parents did for me when I was a young adult, like, you know, well, I want to make these car payments for you and you can pay me because, you know, they're afraid I would, you know, like I would screw it up and they didn't want that for me. Well, you know, it also, the underlying message there is I don't trust you. I don't believe that you can do this. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I see working with a lot of young adults with addiction issues. I see a lot of people who just don't know how to do anything. And on some level kind of hate themselves for it and feel ashamed of it. When my parents were pretty good about, you know, if I'm capable of doing it, if not, they're not doing it for me. Right.
Yeah.
Like, aside from dinner, basically, you know, I mean, my mom also loved to cook for all of us, but yeah, I mean, by the time I was big enough to push a lawnmower, I was out mowing people's yards, making money. And, you know, they were really good about, you know, fostering that sort of resourcefulness, which ultimately our job is to teach them how to be functional adults, right? I mean, that's the point.
Yeah.
And good people.
Yeah. I mean, and when you start at a young age with certain things, I mean, it's different now. It's like, I think back to when I was a kid and we would just go out and ride our bikes through the neighborhoods for hours. Okay, that doesn't really happen like that anymore. And, you know, some of it is really, you know, it's sad to me that those things have changed so much, but also, you know, that it is so important for them to learn independence and what they're capable of.
Right.
Because the second that they move out, if they can't figure out how to use the washing machine, like, they don't feel so good about themselves.
Right.
Like, basic skills that they need to have as they move forward. I said one of the things that this pause, that's what I like to call the part during the pandemic where the kids had to come home from college and everything, that everybody learned how to do everything while they were home. Because, you know, we went from our oldest hadn't been home, I mean, other than like for short breaks, for 6 years, and then he was home full time, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we're like back up from a 50% empty nester to full six kids at home and really having them understand that like everybody contributes. You know, we had the big chart out so that nobody fought over it. Again, with six kids, you know, you have to make sure that it's not about being equal, but everybody has to do something.
Right.
And, you know, really teaching them skills that they need to have. Like, you have to mop the floor. You have to learn how to clean the toilets. All of these things you're going to have to do later in life. Learn how to do them now.
Mm-hmm.
So important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I could just go on talking to you forever. I've really enjoyed having you on.
Thank you. Me too.
And I definitely want you to come back. You're going to write other books and have a podcast. And so anytime you want to come back. But so looking back at it all, when was the time when the younger Simone needed some support, advice? When was it? And what would you go back and say to her?
So I would definitely say that it was when I was in high school. I struggled in high school. I moved to Florida when I was starting ninth grade, and my parents put me in a school where the kids had been together for basically their whole lives. And I had a really hard time making friends, feeling like I mattered, feeling like I belonged. And I couldn't give myself a break because I felt like nobody wanted me there. And that wasn't the case. It was just, again, perception, right? So looking back, I would say to myself to not be so hard on myself. I was so hard on myself when I was that age that nothing was ever good enough. Nothing was right. Maybe it's a typical teenager, but for me, it was one of those moments in time that just really stand out that I really didn't feel good about myself. So I would say to not be so hard on myself, to try to enjoy some of the moments instead of rushing to get to the next stage, because that's what I did. I left high school after 11th grade. I went early admission to Auburn for a year just to get out of high school. Instead of, you know, persevering and really trying to enjoy the moments, I just thought that I'd have to move to the next step. So I'd love to be able to go back and talk to my younger self. I can't tell you that I would have listened.
Right.
At least I could have told myself something. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Simone. This has been great.
Thank you so much for having me here. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I'm going to try to record this outro here for the third time. I don't know what's going on, but things are acting wonky. I've already gone over this twice. And, you know, I'm still learning how to do all this stuff. Anyway, thanks for checking out the show. Had a great time with Simone. Read her book. You can find links in the show notes. You can subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Please do. Amazon, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Listen Notes, Overcast, Pandora, Podbay, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Public, Spotify, Stitcher, Eventually, I post all the episodes on YouTube. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel. Whatever they allow you to do, at whatever platform you use, please subscribe, follow, whatever it is. Leave a rating or a review. If you like the show, I'd love for you to do that. Every little bit helps. It helps the most if you do it at Apple Podcasts. Or if you don't have an Apple device, if you could do it at Podchaser. Links in the show notes for all that. If you have questions or comments, you can call 561-247-4757 and leave a message. Might even play it on the show. I'd love to hear from you. For early access to this and all episodes, as well as supplemental content, including unedited interviews, you can support the show on Patreon. That's patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Right now, for a limited time, you can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. Thank you to the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Thank you to Wendy Chin at Equivox. The Path to Authenticity is also proud to support the I Speak Media Foundation. So check it out. Check out the website, thepathtoauthenticity.com. Players on there, other content related to guests, the 20 questions feature that I do for every guest. Check it out. You can email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, which is my preferable place to be if I'm going to be taking part in social media. Also, through links in the show notes, you can find my Spotify playlists. So thank you to Simone. Thank you guys for listening. Hope your April is off to a good start. Be nice.
We need a guitar player.
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.